Okay, and we are recording. So, welcome everybody. This week we are on to Module 4 of ITE 1. As usual, I will kick the ball off with the quiz from last week. So, our little hot little typing fingers to the foe, and if we can just go through, I think it's about seven questions. So, okay, question one. A technician is installing a new power supply in a computer. Which type of power connector should be used to connect to a CD-ROM? Is it A, a Berg connector, B, Mini Molex, C, a Molex, or D, a 20-pin ATX connector? Go now.
A Molex.
Yeah, you're supposed to type your answer into chat, Ruby, because if you tell everybody else, then they'll know what the answer is.
So, I
If you
guess.
can, if you can tab and hit your chat button, and then alt-tab into your chat window, you can type your answer
Sorry,
into the
the
chat
letters
window.
mixed up.
We haven't had many answers, have there been
Yeah, just read the letters again, Geraldine.
any? Okay, sure. They are A, a B, A, a B. I'll try and say that again. A, a Berg connector. B, a Mini Molex. C, a Molex. Or D, a 20-pin ATX connector.
See.
And what's the question? Because I missed it.
What do you plug into a CD-ROM?
We're starting well today.
Oh, we're off to a racing start today.
Well, you can't help a bit of bad luck.
So, we're waiting for these answers.
Is everybody doing the quiz or are we? Yeah, it doesn't seem like everybody's answering.
We're getting some now. Yeah. Oh, okay. Okay. Well,
See.
the correct answer was yes. Correct answer was C, a Molex connector. So we'll see if everybody's awake now. Question two. Okay. A technician is installing a new power supply in a computer. Which type of power connector should be used to connect to an ATX motherboard? Is it A, a Berg connector, B, a Molex, sorry, B, a Mini Molex, C, a Molex, or D, a 20-pin connector? Go now. We're getting better. Yes, yep. That's good. Everybody got that one right.
Yeah, we're not getting 15 answers. Yeah, look, if you have a guess, guys, this is a quiz, and we're not going to shoot you if you get it wrong. Please try and answer the question in the chat window. If you get it wrong, we don't care, but we'd like to see 15 answers out of 15 people if we can.
Absolutely. Yeah. This is class participation, okay? All right, so question three. When installing a new CPU, which items will help maintain even contact and heat distribution between the CPU and the heat sink? Is it A, silicon spray, B, graphite paste, C, glue, or D, thermal compound?
Celestic.
We're still not getting answers from some of the students, and we can see who answers and who doesn't. Is there a reason for that?
Okay, if everyone's not going to have a go, we'll tell you the answer, but you're missing out here. Okay, thank you. Some more coming. All right. The correct answer is D, which is thermal compound.
And a lot of these questions that turn up
Well done, Ruby.
in your in this quiz also turn up in your end of chapter exam. So you're actually helping yourselves if you actually answer the quiz and have a go at it, because that means you don't have to lose marks at the end of module exam, which is always good.
And we also did this quiz last week, so this is just a refresher. Okay. Question four. When installing a CPU in a ZIF socket, How should the technician align the pins to avoid damage? A. Pin 1 is always aligned with the opposite corner from the base. B. Pin 1 on the CPU is aligned with pin 1 on the ZIF socket. C. Pin 1 is aligned with the corner closest to the memory. And D. The remove corner of the CPU is always aligned with the corner opposite pin 1. Go now. Okay. Okay. We didn't trick anyone that time. It was B. Pin 1 on the CPU is aligned with pin 1 on the ZIF socket. Question 5. A technician is installing additional memory in a computer. How can the technician guarantee that the memory is correctly aligned? A. The label on the memory module should always face the CPU. B. A notch in the memory module should be aligned with a notch in the memory slot. C. The arrows on the memory module should be aligned with the arrows on the motherboard slot. And D. All memory and motherboard slots are color-coded with one red end and one blue end. Go now. The correct answer is B. Is that better? A notch in the memory module should be aligned with a notch in the memory slot. Question 6. When mounting a system board in a computer case, what is used to prevent the system board from touching the bottom of the case? Is it A. Standoffs. B. Ground fault isolators. C. Silicon spray. Or D. Grounding straps. That's great. Good, everybody having a go. That's great. Okay, you were correct. Everybody was correct there. The answer was A. Standoffs. That's what we call them. Okay, question 7. When installing multiple drives, what is the name given to the drive that is attached to the middle connector on a PATA, P-A-T-A, cable? Is it A, the secondary drive, B, the master drive, C, the middle drive, D, the redundant drive, or E, the slave drive? Go now.
I'm still in Ventrilo. I just happened to hit escape in my chat window.
Okay, the correct answer was E. It's called the slave drive. Okay, question 8. When installing adapter cards in a computer, how should a technician properly secure the card? A. Install the card and attach it to the expansion slot using thermal paste. B. Install the card and attach it to the system board using thermal pads. C. Install the card and secure it using metal retaining clips located on the expansion slot. D. Install the card and secure it to the case with a screw. Go now.
You're only picking one, and it happens to be D in this case. Mm-hmm. If you pick them all, you get it wrong, Trevor.
Yeah, so you actually install the card and secure it to the case with a screw. That's the correct answer. Okay, last question there. Which two, this time we want two, connectors are used to connect external peripherals? A. EIDE. B. Molex. C. PATA. D. PS2. And E. USB. Go now.
Sorry, I missed the question.
I'll repeat the question. Which two connectors are used to connect external peripherals? You've got to choose two. EIDE, Molex, PATA, PS2, and USB. Which was E? Most people are getting it right. Okay. Well, the correct answer... Oh, we've still got them coming. Okay. Okay, the two choices you should choose in that one to connect your external peripherals to your computer were D, PS2, and E, USB. Okay, that was good, guys. You did pretty well. And as Kerry said, it's really just about, you know, class participation and helping yourself, because you will get, if not the same, you'll get similar questions. So it's good practice to go through those.
Now, just before we get started on Module 4 lecture, we have to announce that we are giving away a free USB wireless card for students who have completed both of their skills exams, or who've completed one, and one lucky student will be chosen. So if you haven't done either or both of your skills pre-skills exams by Monday, you will not go in the draw to win this free wireless card. So you could win a free USB wireless adapter if you've completed your skills exams by Monday. And there's only one, so we're only giving it to one lucky student. But don't complete, not in with a chance. All right, over to you, Geraldine.
Okay, so that's something to look forward to. Okay, so today we're going to be talking about preventative maintenance and how to troubleshoot your computer. Very important that you're having regular maintenance on your computer. And, you know, that's going to keep it in all good, tip-top condition. And you're going to have less computer failures or... less money in the long term spent on your computer. So we're going to be talking a little bit about how to troubleshoot and that type of thing today. So basically, preventative maintenance is used to reduce the probability of having problems, as I mentioned, and you do it in a sort of regular and a systematic sort of way. You'd be looking at things, how about you tell me, what things would you look at when you're looking at preventative maintenance?
Not even booting up the computer.
Checking
I'll
regularly.
Say that as a joke, because sometimes it breaks when you boot it up.
Actually, one of the most likely times for electrical components to fail is when they're powered up. So, yeah, not such a joke after all.
Well, there you go. I was thinking along the lines of Windows destroying itself. But yeah, thanks, Kerry.
You'd have a look at your, say for example, firstly, you might
yes,
look at your hardware
virus checkers,
condition.
Preventative maintenance.
Yeah, all that type of thing in your software. What about, say hardware first, we're looking at things like the cabling, making sure your cablings are okay and not frayed, that type of thing. Your peripherals, the things that connect to your computer, having a look at whether things seem to be overheating or that type of thing, or whether there's any sort of sign of excess wear. As for your software side of things, you could be looking at keeping things like your security updates and your operating system updates all up to date and make sure that they're functioning okay, and hopefully by looking, as I mentioned, at the things like your hardware and your software, you're going to be making sure that your computer's in tip-top condition. So it's really good to have a systematic approach to it, so that you're doing it on a regular basis. Also, another thing, dusts are high. Can cause problems if you've got too much dust, either, you know, particularly inside the computer. So it's always the enemy to make things overheat and that type of thing. Now, what I would suggest to you too, the other thing would be, as you say, and I'm not sure who said it now, was antivirus programs, making sure they're all up to date and working functioning. Was that Elise that's mentioned that?
Myself and Corey, okay. I think, said it too.
Okay, yeah. So that's very important. So we talk firstly about the hardware side of maintenance, as you're going to be looking at getting rid of the dust that's around any fan intakes and off your power supply, keeping the inside of the computer clean, checking your cabling, that type of thing, keeping your keyboard and mouse clean as well. All those types of things are going to help your computer last longer. Okay, so as I mentioned, that you need a sort of regular systematic approach to looking after your computer, and also if you're looking for troubleshooting, at troubleshooting your computer, you've got to be thinking along the lines of keeping records of anything you do and what the outcomes of what you do are, so that if you've got the same problem, as we mentioned I think last week, you've got the same problem later, then you can go back and review. Okay, so if we talk about the troubleshooting processes, I guess the first thing was to get the data from your customer, what's going wrong, what the problem is. Make sure that you're actually identifying that problem, getting as much information as you can, any obvious issues you've got, and then you'd sort of look for a quick solution and try and sort of troubleshoot that way and solve the problem. If that doesn't work, you're going to have to make sure that you're going to the next step. So basically, in a nutshell, your process would be getting your data from the customer, getting down to the nitty-gritty of what the obvious issues are, trying quick solutions. If that doesn't work, you're going to have to go and look at the computer to see what the computer's actually telling you what the problem is.
One of the little buzzwords things we had to remember this, which is not the ones in the notes, was the WISE method. What is the problem? Investigate, solve, and evaluate, which is a different way of putting what Geraldine just said.
Well, that's a good way, actually. It's always good to have sort of acronyms, you know, or something to remember things by, so that you they tend to stick in your brain. Everyone remembers from music, everybody who did music, all cows eat grass, and every good boy deserves fruit, all those types of things help you to remember. And we got any musicians out there? We have got a couple, I know. Ruby, you are. I think Ibrahim missed too. Okay, so I guess, too, the thing to look at is before you start any repairs on a computer is to make sure that you are backing up your information. I know Kerry spoke about this last week, too, is sort of backup, 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 because if you don't and you start playing around with the computer and you lose all your data, you're not going to be happy chappies and ladies. So back up everything that you do. So basically you can back up. Can anyone tell me some of the ways that you can actually back up information on your computer?
Send your data to a network share and let the admin do it.
Portable hard drive?
Yep. We're getting a few answers here too.
We're getting flash drives, thumb drives, external hard drives, tape drives, CDs, yep.
Pen drive.
Can anybody tell me what's wrong with backing up to external hard drives, just while we're talking about backing things up?
Because you've got to remember to do it. Just like any other hard drive.
Well, you've also got to keep in mind that they're hard drives, and sometimes when you turn your external hard drive on, it won't. So make sure you've got another method of backup as well as the external hard drive. It's all very nice to go and buy an external hard drive and put all your files onto it, and what you can sometimes find is once your primary hard drive dies, your external hard drive will have decided that it'll take the same week to fall over and you won't get it all back. So watch out for that.
That's a very valid point. The other thing that you might need to know when you're talking to your customer about backing up is find out things like the date of the last backup that they did, what they actually backed up, the data integrity of the backup, and the availability of all their backup media for a data restore. It's a wonderful thing to think of in hindsight, but how many people, Kerry, do we come across that haven't backed up and lose everything, eh? I think everybody's done it at some stage or another. Somebody here saying in the past 3 weeks. Okay. Sorry, was there a question there? All right. As somebody who's working in the IT industry, you're going to get to a lot of levels of computer knowledge from your customer. Some of them will have very basic knowledge, and I guess it's really important not to sort of talk at a level that's way beyond them. Make it in, it's sort of like doctors talking over your head when you're seeing a doctor and you wouldn't have a clue what they're saying. Come down to the person's level. If the person understands a lot of what you're talking about, that's okay. But if you think that they are sort of a beginner with computers, it's no point talking to them about all the inside and outside. Just respect the level that they're at and keep those communication lines open. Okay, another way to get information is to use open-ended questions. Anyone know what an open-ended question is?
It can't be answered with a simple yes or no.
That's a perfect way to put it, actually. Yeah, that's good. So you come out with things like, you know, a question that sort of, you know,
so what were you doing when this problem occurred? What do you think the problem is? Do you have any ideas what could have caused this? Obviously going up to the user and going, so you broke it, didn't you? That's a good example of a closed question.
We hear a lot of those questions around here. Yeah, so what and why type questions and how. Those type of things are all examples of open-ended questions, as Kerry gave you some there. When you're talking then about closed-ended questions, they are the ones that you have a yes or no. Okay. I think by using the open-ended questions as a general rule, you'll find that you'll get a lot more information out of the client that you're dealing with. But sometimes it's important, you know, did this happen? Yes, did this happen? No. So just, you know, sort of go through it with them and use a combination of both. Next step in the troubleshooting process is verifying with your client what the obvious issue is. Talk to them about it. Then you're going to sort of go quickly check, see if you can do a quick a quick check to solve the problem, and if not, you're going to go around things like you. Sorry, I'll just rephrase that. But if you're going to do a quick check, go on things first off. Something that happened here this morning. What would be that, Trevor? You're looking at why you can't get on the internet, for example. What are you going to look at first?
Actually, that was Graham that had that problem, not Trevor.
Oh, was it? Sorry. Yeah. It was Trevor that caused it. Okay. Look at the obvious things first. We had an example here. Not mentioning any names, Trevor and Graham. And we had a little problem this morning. Two people not able to get on the internet and no cable into the back of the computer because somebody stole it. So look at your hardware first. I know you can't hear Trevor, but Trevor's saying he was on and he was happy. So check your cables. If you're still finding that you think the cable's right, then remove it and reconnect it. Sometimes you get a better fit and it can help. Next, I guess, would be reboot your computer. You could do things like logging in as a different user. And another thing, an easy thing to do is to check your operating system for the updates and patches that there may be. Again, nextly, there's a new word. Next, you would document any solutions that you've found and keep that for any future reference. We talk now about the gathering of data from your computer. If you've tried all of the quick fixes and you've still got problems, you now have to look at the data that you can get from the computer. One of the ways you can do that is using the event viewer. So the event viewer gets updated with information about any errors that are happening. It actually records what the problem was that's occurred, also the date and time that it happened, and how severe it was. Also, what the source of the problem is, and it gives an ID number. It will also tell you, particularly if, like, if you're in a network situation, it'll tell you who, which user was using it when the problem occurred. And then you would another type of anyone tell me another type of method we could use to look for information from the computer? No, all quiet. Okay.
What about Dr. Watson?
Dr. Watson? Yeah. There's a few of those different programs that, like Dr. Watson, will give you information. I was sort of thinking a little bit on the simpler one. There was the device manager, and that's going to tell you all of the devices that you've got configured to the computer, and it'll give you error codes. It actually, for someone who has sight or has a little bit of sight, there's a yellow circle with an exclamation point that appears, and it, the type of... it gives you, like, if that appears, you've got a error, and if a device is disabled, it actually does a red circle with an X in the middle of it. So not much help to us as blind people, but...
NVDA will actually tell you this device has a problem. If your cursor over a device with the actual icon next to it, it will actually speak the icons. So anybody who's using NVDA, non-visual desktop access, it works quite nicely in the device manager in that respect.
Have we got anyone using NVDA out there?
Does JAWS tell you, Kerry?
No, JAWS doesn't tell you. Otherwise, I would have said.
Okay. Sort of like one of those things you sort of need to be told, but generally, if the tree's open at that point, you'll know that there's something going on, i.e. an error, as Geraldine and Kerry have just explained.
Another way that you get to know what is going on is, and we touched on it last week, was the beep codes. I should turn around and ask you all those beep code bits that I read out.
One beep means there's something wrong with Geraldine. Two beeps means there's something wrong with Geraldine. Three beeps... No, just kidding. And to just be aware, people, that although Geraldine did give us a massive list of beep codes, they are specific to the system board. And they are not standard across BIOSes, so you do need to know the beep codes for your particular computer. That is not something we can troubleshoot in this lecture, I'm afraid. You might have a JAWS problem, you might have the wrong version of Internet Explorer. For example, Internet Explorer 7 requires JAWS 7.1 or later, or you forget it. So if you've got JAWS 7.0 or earlier, go back to IE6. And there are another... If you've got Internet Explorer... If you've got JAWS 8, then, well, you'll have to speak to a computer expert outside of lecture. If you own your copy of JAWS, you are, of course, welcome to call Freedom Scientific for tech support, and they will help you sort that. Otherwise, you could talk to a knowledgeable computer expert outside of lecture.
Okay, so as I mentioned, and as Kerry mentioned, I should say, was that each BIOS manufacturer is going to have a different and a unique beep sequence for your hardware failures. So when you're troubleshooting, you're going to power on the computer and listen to the beep code as the system proceeds through to POST. Now, can anyone tell me what POST stands for? I hope everybody can.
Test.
Thank you very much. That's great. Yes, it's the power on self-test. And generally, you'll find that most computers are going to give you one beep, and that's going to indicate to you that the system's powering away, going on nicely. So, and if you start hearing multiple beeps, it usually means something's going wrong. Okay. All right. The BIOS information. Now, the computer, if you find that the computer boots and then stops after the power on self-test, then it would be time to look at the BIOS settings, determined if you've got a problem there. Now, BIOS is pretty inaccessible or totally inaccessible for us as vision impaired and blind people. So you will need someone with eyes to have a look at that. The other thing to do is to refer to your system board manual and to make sure that the BIOS settings are accurate. So you'd need to go through that and set them up, but you will need some sighted help. We talked a little bit about some diagnostic tools earlier, and they are very useful to you. You can actually get a number of third-party tools. Now, I'm going to throw that over to you guys. How about you start telling us some of the third-party tools that you've either used or you know of?
You can get hard drive utilities like I did on my worksheet. There are a lot of manufacturers have utilities out specific to their type of hard drives. So mine instance the Western Digital.
Yep.
There's other programs that will, as we call it, degates in your computer, clean up some of the mess like CCleaner. They're recommended if you are used to using those programs. Oh, what else? Of course, your virus checkers and stuff. There's one brand I'm not going to mention here.
Spinrite. Yep, that's a disk utility from Gibson Research.
Yep.
There's Norton utilities, although I wouldn't recommend anybody run a recent version of those on anything. Run them at your own risk. Norton utilities used to be quite good. As of about version 6, they sort of lost the plot and did all sorts of strange things to your system. And whilst we can't necessarily say that one brand is good and one brand is bad, we tend to steer well clear of Norton anything these days.
Indeed.
It seems to be unanimous. Okay. So, yeah, there's a whole lot of third-party utilities that are going to help you troubleshoot your computer. I would suggest, too, that it's a good thing to go and have a look, Google up and go and have a read about all the different ones that are out there. Yes, there's quite a number of them, and you're going to get a lot of information that way. Helps you to make, and also listening to other people, what their, you know, what experiences they've had that are positive with a particular program, and what they've found is not so good. And particularly for us with vision impairments, because some programs are accessible and some are definitely not. Okay, so it's a matter of doing your research, because a lot of these things cost quite a bit of money, so you want to do your homework before you actually decide on a particular program. So I mentioned about the internet being a good resource to look things up, other people and their comments. Manufacturer websites, really important to sort of go and check out those websites, and often the frequently answered questions section gives you a lot of information as well, and look at your computer manuals and a lot of the technical websites. A lot of us subscribe to a lot of technical websites, and you get quite a lot of extra information by being on those. Anyone on some of those lists and things that are out there? Were you talking over technology?
A couple
Maybe
of
I should
the
ask who isn't. Sorry, who was that other than Corey? Oh, Dan, yeah. Dan, you were saying?
Yeah, no, it's a really good technical information sites and lists that detail people's problems and whatnot.
Mm. Yeah, there's quite a few out there, and you do get a lot of information by, you know, chatting with other people and, you know, learning that way as well. Okay, so after you've solved all the problems of the world and you've fixed up the person's computer, again, you're going to have to make sure that you document it, talk to the person about what you had found. Don't forget to give them their bill with a couple of extra zeros on it. With a couple of extra zeros on it. But do keep a log of what you did. So that have something, a journal, whether it's on your own computer or somewhere that you can actually verify what you did and, you know, what you'd use to solve their problems.
Can I just interrupt at this point, Geraldine? Oh, say something? Yeah,
you
I've worked
did.
In a number
That's
of...
fine.
That's good. I said something. Yeah, I've worked in a number of help desks where if you are working at, say, level 1 support or even level 2, a lot of these larger corporations actually have software that will log the call and log the history of what's been done. And that way, if anyone comes in after you, they can see what's happened prior to them being involved. And it also, of course, helps you remind you as to what sort of the common problems are if you come across it again.
Yeah, that's great. Thank you for that. So, yeah, there's a lot of those, resources out there that you can use. I know I was on a couple of lists until we sort of started this semester. See, now I'm quite busy with our lists. Are you all finding, speaking of lists, the lists are a helpful thing to be able to ask questions?
Yes, it's good.
Sorry, I missed that.
Yeah, he said, yeah, they do, basically. That was Corey saying
okay.
They do.
No, I just missed it, yeah. Excellent. Oh, that's good. Okay. All right, now you'll be very surprised to know today we've actually got through very quickly, so we're going to actually continue on to Module 5 in a moment. But basically today was all about just troubleshooting, how to deal with your customer. You will find there are some short modules, and then there's some longer ones, particularly as we get on further, and you'll find you'll take 2 weeks to get over one. So what we'll do is we'll carry on with the quiz for this week, and then we will stop recording for a moment or two, and then we'll start next week's, or I should say Module 5, and we'll see how far we get with that. So as I say, today was really about just troubleshooting, looking after your equipment, doing preventative maintenance, getting familiar with some of the packages out there. Perhaps if you could send me some information through the week about different third-party software that you've used that you've found successful, and we can share that with the list perhaps. Maybe put it onto Cavi Discuss. Okay, important to sort of back up and also to keep documentation. All right, so Module 4 quiz. Okay, question 1. And if you could get your typing fingers ready to type into chat. Which 3 common tasks are performed during preventative maintenance? So we need 3, okay? A, check and secure loose cables. B, update the RAM. C, clean the mouse and the keyboard. D, update drivers. E, reinstall the operating system. Or F, install additional peripherals. Go now. Mm-hmm. Okay, the options were, I'll read them again. A, check and secure the loose cables. B, update the RAM. C, clean the mouse and the keyboard. D, update the drivers. E, reinstall the operating system. And F, install additional peripherals. Go now. Okay, we're still getting answers. The correct answers were A, you should check and secure the loose cables. C, you should clean the mouse and the keyboard. And D, you should update your drivers. Okay, all right, question 2. Now we need 2 answers to this one. In which 2 situations is it recommended to ask the customer to sign a liability release form before attempting any kind of repair? A, the technician needs to share the responsibility with the customer. B, the information on the computer is critical. C, the technician is unable to back up the customer information. D, the information in the backup is confidential. and E, the customer is unable to provide a backup. I will go through those again for you, Phil. I'm getting quite a few answers. That's good. Okay, we are just still getting some answers, but for the person who wanted me to read that again, I will. The question was again, or the options were, when the technician needs to share the responsibility with the customer, that was A. B, the information on the computer is critical. C, the technician is unable to back up the customer information. D, the information in the backup is confidential. And E, the customer is unable to provide a backup. That was correct. Okay. Most people, I think, got that one. That's good.
What was the correct answer?
Yep, C and E. The technician is unable to back up the customer information. And E, the customer is unable to provide a backup. Well done.
I would have thought in these days of legal madness you'd sign a liability form before you even touch their computer, otherwise I'd sue you. Yeah, every single incident.
That's true. Well, I tried to put in my text to send.
The Cisco answer is, though, C and E. Okay, so if you get that in your... but yes, I'm with Kerry. I would be inclined to do that too. Okay. All right, so question three. What is the first step in the troubleshooting process? Is it A, gather data from the computer? B, gather data from the customer? C, verify the obvious issues? E, evaluate the problem and implement the solution? E, close with the customer? Or F, try quick solutions? Go now. Okay, we're getting a lot of different answers there. Yeah, mostly, mostly correct. Okay, the first thing you do is gather the data from your customer. Okay, you start talking to the person first because you're going to have to do that to find out what the heck's going on. Okay, so that's the correct answer, is gathering the data from your customer, which was B. Okay, question four. Which type of question allows the customer to completely describe the problem? Is it A, a closed-ended question? B, an open-ended question? C, specific? Or D, technical question? Go now. That's excellent, everybody. Yeah.
The answer is B. B. Yep, not a closed answered question. Won't let the user give you any information, so definitely B. Yeah, we know about you, Sundar. Is there something specific you're after?
Okay. Question five. What is the last step in the troubleshooting process? Is it A, gather data from the computer? B, gather data from the customer? C, evaluate the problem and implement the solution? D, close with the customer? Or E, try quick solutions?
I would have said F, go to sleep.
I just couldn't help it. Sorry, Geraldine. I've been doing this sort of stuff for years.
For the local students, someone said
you did say the last.
No, the last step is actually chase the customer up for when they didn't pay, Elise.
Well, that's another option. I guess perhaps you could say send the invoice and then run so you don't have to go back to the customer.
Okay,
welcome new student, and I'm glad to have you along. So there you go. Okay, well, what was the correct answer, Geraldine?
Absolutely. The correct answer was close with the customer, which was D. Okay, so you do your wind up with them.
Document the problem.
No, this is the last one. That's before that.
Well, sending the invoice is actually closing with the customer, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah,
really.
It is.
Yeah. Okay, we have come to the end of that module. Everybody happy to go along with the start of next week's, what should be next week's?
Yeah, why not?
Everybody happy to do that? Yeah, okay. Because we're sort of an hour, yeah.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Cool. So we... if you, yes, this is just a short little module on troubleshooting. So.